south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Now, a week or so ago, we talked about guns down in Latin America and how green gringos and new expats coming down are often shocked to see guys with shotguns riding shotgun on delivery trucks like Coke trucks, water trucks, Pepsi trucks. And also guys with shotguns standing outside of bars, restaurants, discos, and convenience stores. Well, I hope I went into enough detail on that to satisfy your curiosity and allay your fears on that point. But I never did get around to comparing the gun violence and homicide figures down here versus the crime stats you guys live with in Cleveland and the rest of the first world. But thanks to Oscar, one of our loyal listeners, friend, and previous Expat Wisdom Seminar attendee, who sent me a recent article from Atlantic Magazine. Now I can give you some solid numbers on crime and homicide stats in U.S. cities versus similar kinds of stats in Latin America. And the title of this Atlantic article from January 22, 2013 is Gun Violence in U.S. Cities Compared to the Deadliest Nations in the World. And here's a little excerpt I think you're really going to find interesting. Here the article states, if the city of New Orleans, with a rate of 62 gun murders per 100,000 residents, if New Orleans were a country, it would have the second highest homicide rate in the world. Then it goes on to say, Detroit's gun homicide rate at 35.9 per 100,000 has the same gun homicide rate as the Central American country of El Salvador, expat Eddie's stomping grounds. Now, the article doesn't mention Eddie. I just thought I'd throw that in there, you know? Anyway, then it goes on to say, Baltimore's homicide rate is the same as Guatemala's at 34.8 per 100,000. And Newark, as well as Miami, have the same homicide rate as Colombia. And Washington, D.C. has the same homicide rate as Brazil. And Atlanta, Georgia, the same homicide rate as South Africa. And Cleveland, hey, how'd that get in there? Anyway, Cleveland has just a little bit higher gun homicide rate than the Dominican Republic. Now, the gun murder rate in Buffalo is the same as Panama. And Houston, the same as Ecuador. The gun homicide rate in Chicago is the same as Guyana. Now, there's a Latin American country most expats don't even know about. In fact, I've met about two people in my life who've actually been there. And they were missionaries building outhouses for Jesus, you know? Now, Guyana is a tiny, sparsely populated little Latin country on the northeast coast of South America. And the whole place has only got about 750,000 people. It's a whole country with just the population of Fort Worth, Texas. And for those of you who might be thinking to expat there, since Jim Jones and his little group found it such a lovely spot to drink Kool-Aid back in 1978, well, just postpone that trip for a while. I will give you a heads up on Guyana in the future, so stay tuned. But just for your information, I don't really recommend it as an expat destination for a lot of reasons, but the main one being that they're very lacking in first world style healthcare services. All the hospitals, clinics, and medical and dental care facilities are, I'd say, about 20 to 30 years behind first world standards. So if you ever have a serious health problem, you'll have to get the hell out of Guyana in a hurry. And there are a handful of other good reasons why I don't recommend the place, but I'll get to it soon. So, what does it have going for it? Well, the only thing I can think of right now is that Guyana's main language is English. Anyway, back to those homicide rates. Now, here's one that'll really surprise you. Phoenix, Arizona's gun homicide rate is actually a bit higher than, get this, Mexico. And the homicide rate in Los Angeles, slightly higher than the Philippines. And Boston, well, the murder rate there is just slightly higher than in Nicaragua. And New York City, well, it's just slightly higher than the homicide rate in Argentina. And I could go on, but you get the idea. Now, at the conclusion of this Atlantic article, the author says, quote, the sad reality is that many American cities, have rates of gun homicides comparable to some of the most violent nations in the world. Unquote. Now, if any of you out there want the link, just send me an email and I'll pass it along. Now, naturally, every author has a bias, and as you read this article, you get the feeling that this guy is advocating much more gun control to solve the gun homicide problems in the States. And that does seem to be a very hot button these days, doesn't it? So how do I feel about it? Believe me, I get asked that question all the time. Well, basically, I've always been a libertarian with a progressive bent. In fact, Expat Eddie calls me a bent libertarian. And I've heard all the gun arguments on both sides, just like you have, I'm sure. And as for me, I don't want to get into prolonged gun conversations, since it's like the abortion issue. You can never really change anyone's mind. But I'll sum it up like this. Just imagine this scenario. Suppose a 100-pound woman just discovered that a 200-pound crazy drunk guy has just broken into her house. A sharp tongue and a call to 911 is just not going to make it. So you can go ahead and give your girlfriend, wife, or mother a whistle and a can of mace and hope for the best. And that's fine, but just don't take away their right to have a gun if they want. But let's get on to other things. Now, in the last few shows, you know I've talked a bit about the Decameron thing, and I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you I've gotten a few emails from people basically telling me to shut up about it. They want me to lay off because the whole idea of being able to retire in luxury on basically a half a Social Security check seems to be grating on a lot of people who are stuck on that first world treadmill and can't get off for love or money. And as one guy explained it, he said, "Johnny, when you talk about the Decameron deal, I just want to lay down and cry." Sorry about that. I shouldn't laugh about that. It's not really that funny, is it? Anyway, it seems the more I talk about it, the more it seems to depress certain expat wannabes who don't see a way to get off their treadmill up north. But the thing is, in actuality, it should be a terrific incentive to jump off that treadmill, like, right away. Though, you know what they say, you gotta do what you gotta do. I guess it's human nature to feel a little sad when it's someone else who wins the lottery, you know? Then again, you gotta buy a ticket to play, which means getting off that treadmill. And that's the real catch-22, isn't it? So, in order not to break any hearts up there or drive anyone towards the Prozac bottle, I'll shut up about the Decameron, okay? Now, you know every once in a while I mention Doug Casey on this show, and I've been a great supporter and follower of that guy for a long, long time, 20 years or so. To me, he's always been a brilliant contrarian and very good financial analyst. However, you can't be right 100% of the time. Case in point, in the last year or so, when he made that big move to Argentina to start his own first world style subdivision for upscale expats and wannabes. Well, from the start, I always thought that was a big mistake. Selecting Argentina, that is. Because, you know, I'm in the habit of warning people away from Argentina. Once again, it's a financial basket case. Surprise, surprise, for about the fifth time since I've been keeping track. And it's about to implode again on a grand scale. Now, admittedly, I'm not as smart as Doug Casey is, but I've been living down here about 10 times longer than he has, so I like to think I know at least a few things about Latin America that he doesn't, just from lessons learned. So when you guys send me emails saying, "Doug Casey's really sold on Argentina, and since he's got a huge real estate investment there, and is actually living part-time there himself, he must know something that we don't know, so why not follow his lead and go on down to Argentina?" Now, in response to that, I don't want you to take my word for it. I want to give you some solid facts. That way it won't be Johnny said this versus Doug Casey said that. Instead, it'll be Doug Casey said this versus Johnny's hard statistics. And I like that better because then I don't have to defend myself against a guy who's got 10 IQ points on me, you know? Instead, let me just read you this article that came out on February 4th, 2013. And basically, it tells you exactly why you don't want to move to Argentina under any circumstances right now. At least not till after the dust settles, when this latest calamity is over. And who can predict that? Anyway, after the next big blowout bubble, and believe me, Argentina is a bubble looking for a pin, so it's any time now. Anyway, astute expats should be able to go there in a year or two and pick up some terrific bargain basement real estate deals. And believe me, there are no such bargains now. In fact, you'd be nuts to buy any real estate there, barring a foreclosure or a very desperate seller. And anyway, when the big crash comes, it's not just going to happen to Argentina, though for sure, Argentina's going to be at the head of the line. It'll be one of the first dominoes to fall. So let me read you some excerpts from this article that just came out a few days ago, entitled, Argentina Freezes Supermarket Prices to Halt Soaring Inflation, Chaos to Follow. And before I get into this, I just want you to recall your Econ 101 course back in your fuzzy-brained college days, if you can. And if you recall, like good old Adam Smith said in The Wealth of Nations, when any country institutes wage and price controls or wage and price freezes, that's a last-ditch effort by a government that knows financial and economic crisis is right around the corner. A move like that's long been known to be a desperate measure by governments to try to control runaway inflation. And it never works, ever. Basically, wage and price controls cause massive economic dislocations and, if maintained long enough, will effectively destroy an economy. Keep that in mind when I excerpt this article, which, by the way, once again came to my attention by way of my friend Oscar. So here it goes. Up till now, Argentina's descent into a hyperinflationary basket case with a crashing currency and a loss of outside funding was, so far, relatively moderate and controlled. But all of this is about to change. Today, in a futile attempt to halt inflation, the government of Cristina Kirchner announced a two-month price freeze on supermarket products. This price freeze applies to every product in all of the nation of Argentina's largest supermarkets, a group including Walmart, Carrefour, Coto, Jumbo, Disco, and all the other large chains. And it says here the Commerce Ministry has set up a hotline for consumers to call to report any illegal price hikes by these chains. Then the article says, what consumers will certainly do is scramble into these local stores to take advantage of the artificially controlled prices, knowing very well that they have two short months to stock up before a huge wave of inflation comes roaring back. And in fact, many South American analysts are saying that it will escalate into a full hyperinflationary collapse. And you might ask, why price controls? Well, that's because Argentina's inflation rate now is at 30% a year, which is why Argentine citizens are desperately trying to convert their pesos into dollars or euros, get them out of the country, and deposit them in places like nearby Ecuador. And with all that capital rupturing out of Argentino banks, that's why some months ago Kirchner slapped hard and heavy exchange controls on the currency, considered by analysts to be a desperate stopgap measure. And finally, the article says, so to summarize, first you get capital controls, then a currency crisis, then expectations of sovereign default, then a rise in military tensions, and finally price and wage controls, after which all-out chaos usually follows. Study this sequence well, the article says. It will be coming to every single developed country near you in the months and years ahead. So, keep an eye on Argentina for a sneak preview. And my take? Well, you know, I've never recommended Argentina as a good place for expats to locate. And I hate to say I told you so, but I just hope that none of you have been drawn to the rim of that black hole like Doug Casey has. And you know, I could be wrong about all this, but I don't think so. And here's one more email I want to get to before we move along to some other stuff. And this is from Robert, and he's not the only one who's asked me about this, by the way. He says, Don Johnny, I'm wondering how popular swimming pools are in Latin America, and in particular, how big a gap there is between demand and supply of the fine touches of certain pools. And by that, I'm sure Robert means the high-end, deluxe custom pool stuff. Not those prefab jobs or those above-ground, white trash vinyl liner jobs. Anyway, Robert goes on to say, my thinking on this proceeds as usual from my own needs as to what others might need. I don't like fish tank-style public pools where your bacteria commingles with everybody else's bacteria. I added that little bit, by the way, because I hate public pools too. Yuck. Anyway, he says, I don't like having a load of chemicals in the water either. So I come out stinking of chlorine, which is a proven health hazard. In fact, in choosing a gym, I select on the basis of whether they have a pool and how nice it is, since that is my preferred form of exercise. Surely, in the hot areas of Latin America particularly, but even in the perpetual spring areas, good high-end pools would be an obvious market demand, perhaps inadequately supplied. And therefore, there might be room for first-world fine touches for those who can afford it, such as bubbled ozone makers for disinfecting rather than chlorine. I'm talking about regular maintenance, cleaning contracts, pretty tiling, a spa bath on the side, and so on. After all, Latins might be deficient at maintenance, but would be happy to go to places that are well-maintained. Or, for the wealthier ones, to sign a maintenance contract for their pool installations, if marketed right. Cheers, Robert. Okay, Robert, let me go through that stuff. First of all, pools are very popular throughout Latin America, with the wealthy set, of course. And yes, you're right, they don't maintain them. And in fact, I don't think I've ever seen a single pool that's in absolutely perfect, 100% pristine, sparkling condition. Unless, of course, it was just installed last week. And still, I wouldn't bet on it. The fact is, even with a new pool, after a couple of months, there's always some mold or rot or broken or missing tiles somewhere. And Latins absolutely do not know the first thing about how to disinfect their pools. They know, of course, that you have to add chlorine or some kind of chemical. But once again, no one's minding the store except the gardener. Now, like I've said many times before, a gardener is generally your jack of all trades. He not only cuts your grass and trims your bushes, he does a little bit of everything else on the side, like window glazing, woodworking, a little concrete, some bricklaying, roof repair and the like. And if you have a pool, he'll be your pool caretaker. Now, you have to remember, here's a guy with about a 4th to 6th grade education. And when you hand him a couple of sacks of chlorine pellets and a water testing kit, well, you're already asking him to do something way over his pay grade. And if he can even read the manual that came with the pump and the filter system, there's no way he's going to understand what they're talking about. Not that Latins read manuals in the first place. They don't. But do you? And that's why I guarantee that about 80 to 90% of the private pools in Latin America are not chlorinated correctly. In fact, the majority, I would say, are under-chlorinated because chlorine costs money. And when scum starts making an appearance around the tiles or an algae bloom starts to take over, I guarantee that maintenance guy is just going to start dumping chlorine by the buckets in the deep end like a madman. But on the other hand, pool maintenance is a completely different story when you're talking about big hotels and first world style convention complexes. In that case, your Clarions and your Hiltons actually have pool maintenance contracts and maintenance guys that actually know what they're doing. Now, as far as having a pool in the Altiplano region, well, of course, all the upper class and upper middle class people have them. But to tell you the truth, it's just not worth it. It's like having an outdoor pool up in Chicago or Minnesota. You're lucky if you get to use it 2 or 3 months out of the year. And in fact, I know dozens and dozens of people in the Altiplano region who do have pools, and I never see anyone swimming in them. And why is that? Because in the day it's between 70 and 78 degrees, and at night it gets down to 50. So that pool is cold. And no one, I mean no one, has a pool cover down here, which would completely solve that problem, even in the Altiplano. And why do you think Latins don't use pool covers at night? Because they've never heard of them. They don't know they exist. Now, there's an expat business idea, huh? Though, like expat Eddie says, you probably could talk Latins into getting the pool cover. It's getting the gardener up to speed that's going to be the problem. And speaking of heating up your pool, if you go to the local pool supply place, they generally carry everything and anything a big pool supply company does in the States. At least the pool supply stores in the medium to large Latin cities do. So, you'll never have to special order anything. The big stores even stock pool heaters that use propane gas and even solar panels to heat your water if that's the way you want to go. However, I don't know anyone who's ever installed a heater, though they are available. And those big pool supply places also have ozonators and the latest in UV, ultraviolet disinfection, to avoid using chlorine, if that's what you want. All that stuff is available down here. However, I don't know of any Latin who's got a pool who uses anything but chlorine. Again, it's all about that lag time effect. In fact, if you even mention UV or ozone to a pool owner, he doesn't even know what the hell you're talking about. At least, that's my experience. And I know a lot of people with pools down here. I've actually had three of them myself. And it's also been my experience that when you try to get Latins to change the way they've been doing things, it's like talking to a brick wall. But you can bet if their next-door neighbor gets a UV system or an ozonator for their pool, our man in question will run out and get one too. Usually a bigger and better one. And that's why it's not always a good idea to bring down a brand new product that's never been used before down here, even if it's in common use up in the first world, unless Latins are already tuned into the product by seeing it repeatedly on U.S. cable TV, or they see it in common use in first world movies, or used by actors in mindless TV shows that they're addicted to, and therefore want to emulate. Like, for example, if they see it on the Kardashians, then they'll want to have it. Generally speaking, if Latins see a product enough on First World TV, there'll be an instant demand for it. But I'm pretty sure that's never going to be the case with swimming pools. With swimming pools, the usual pattern is a wealthy Latin builds a house and buys a pool, and immediately hands the reins over to his gardener. And when something really goes wrong, he calls up the pool company and they come over and fix it. And a lot of times, in the end, it was the gardener's fault. In fact, I don't believe I've ever known a private pool owner who's had a maintenance contract, which is a big mistake. Now, personally, I'm not big on maintenance contracts myself. I think they're basically a ripoff. But down here, the way Latins mistreat their possessions, it's a different thing altogether. But still, Latins rarely sign on, though I know all the pool supply companies provide that service. Now, the Altiplano makes up only a small part of Latin America, probably 3% or less of the landmass. And 80% of the rest of Latin America is extremely hot. And that's where having a pool can really be a gift. So if you do live on or near a beach or in the lower elevations, you're gonna want a pool. But I'll also point out that pools are very expensive to maintain. For one thing, at sea level near the coast and around the beaches, with that searing sun, you've got a big evaporation problem and you'll be adding water and therefore chlorine all the time. Now, expat Eddie's in El Salvador, and he's not in the Altiplano, and he tells me that he pays over $500 a year just for the chlorine tablets. And then there's the electricity costs for running that pump motor, because you do have to keep that thing cycling, or the chlorine will build up in certain areas of your pool. Not that I recommend chlorinating your pool, I don't. But I'm using chlorine as an example because 99.9% of the pools down here are chlorinated. So anyway, you're running that pool pump many hours a day, and it's usually a 1-horsepower pump, which is equal to having a little less than 8 100-watt light bulbs going all the while the pump is working. And electricity is one of the few expensive things in Latin America, 2 to 3 times as much per kilowatt hour than you pay in the States. So, for example, if you pay 25 cents a kilowatt hour here, and your 1-horsepower pool pump cycled for 8 hours a day, that's 6 kilowatt hours a day, times 30 days, times 25 cents a kilowatt hour, that's $45 a month just to run your pool pump. And that's what expat Eddie says. It costs him about $1,000 a year just to have a pool, a standard chlorinated pool, that is. He hasn't switched over to ozone yet either. So the bottom line is this. If you live in the lowlands, you almost have to have a pool. But you'll be paying first world prices for the maintenance and upkeep. Now, the other day I was at expat Eddie's house getting a dose of chlorine, and he asked me about my latest expat wisdom seminar. And you know, I always invite Eddie to come. And he always says he will, but he never shows. And he has a good reason, but he doesn't want me to talk about it. So I won't. Anyway, Eddie asked me if there were any surprises at the seminar. You know, anything I hadn't counted on. And I said, well, Eddie, as a matter of fact, there was. I actually had a seminar deadbeat, a gatecrasher. A guy who showed up at the very last minute, by design, of course, who didn't pay by PayPal or wire transfer, claiming he'd pay right when he arrived. Well, he did arrive at the very last minute, got lost in the crowd, enjoyed the seminar immensely. And how did I know that? Because he made a point of telling me that every single day. In fact, even right now I can hear him saying, Johnny, I just can't get enough of this. I could listen to this stuff forever. And only after the seminar was over and I realized he'd never paid for it, did I actually send him an email asking him to settle up. Actually, I sent him a few emails because he wasn't anxious to respond. But eventually he sent just one little line saying, "Johnny, I'm not going to pay because I didn't get what I wanted out of this seminar." He didn't get what he wanted. And I asked expat Eddie what Dan really meant by that. And Eddie said, "Johnny, what he wanted was you to pay him to come to the seminar." Then I said, "Eddie, don't laugh. In a way, I did pay him to come to the seminar. Because, you know, the seminar cost included 4 nights in very nice hotels, including breakfast, lunch, transportation, the translator girls, the buses, the drivers, the hotel's salons and equipment that needed to be rented. Basically, quite a few $100s out of my own pocket, which Dan thoroughly enjoyed because he told me so every day. But all the while, he was planning to stiff me for that, too." And then Eddie laughed and he said, "You know, my cousin Lenny is just like deadbeat Dan. Lenny's whole life is about getting over on people. He enjoys stiffing people and getting things for free. He crashes concerts and weddings and bar mitzvahs. And when he walks down to the subway, he'll drop a dollar into a musician's guitar case and sneak $2 for himself while the guy's not looking." And I admitted to Eddie that I was actually warned about that. At my very first seminar, there were a lot of high-powered marketing guys there, some who'd done seminars themselves. One guy specifically warned me about guys like Deadbeat Dan. He said there are some professional seminar parasites out there. He said they use the fact that seminars offer a money-back guarantee, to a point. And you can bet that there'll always be one or two guys out of 100 that'll do that. It's a game for them, and they get their kicks out of stiffing people and getting info for free. It's just part and parcel of doing this seminar thing. And Eddie's last words to me on the subject were, "Johnny, that deadbeat Dan guy, he's a pro. He was the very last one to sign up, so he used that last-minute hustle and bustle to sneak through the cracks. And then, with your seminar in full swing, he just split when he found it convenient." Eddie said he had a deadbeat Dan at his restaurant. The guy had a dead, dried-out cockroach in his pocket, and after ordering and eating the most expensive item on the menu, he snuck it on his plate. Acted irate, didn't pay, and got up and left. Then Eddie said, "What's this guy's full name? Maybe he's my cockroach guy." I said, "Eddie, it's Dan Draked, D-R-A-G-T. That's Dan Draked, D-R-A-G-T. And coincidentally, he's the only person at the seminar who never gave me his return flight info, so I couldn't shake him down at the airport. Totally planned, right?" And Eddie's last words to me? "Welcome to the club. You're no longer a virgin."
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.